NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May of 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Halt, primates listening! It is I, Numator479. According to our studies of your puny mammalian race, we discovered you like very good coffee. And while it is our evolutionary purpose to cause you psychic torment, we want you awake and vivacious to give it. So try our new blend from Spring Hill Jack Coffee. Reptilian in the morning. Our proprietary blend of lightly roasted cacao husks will have you immediately energized upon emerging from the pain cloaca with all your slippery new eggs. Thanks, honey. Hot, I'm cold-blooded. Thanks to Spring Hill Jack and Last Podcast on the Left, I'm ready to get out there and eat some babies. Get out of the way, Hillary Clinton.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
From your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
A lot of massacres in this one.
It's a big massacre. Well, actually, there was a massacre last time, and there's a massacre this time.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is that less people died in the second one, and yet that's the one that's known as the massacre.
I think maybe, branding. It's about when it arrives. Rick Rubin talked all about the idea of that, you know, it's not about what you make in the project, it's about when you deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe it's got a lot to do with it.
Quite
maybe
possibly.
Rick Rubin was there.
I mean, I know the...
He looks like it.
Time track.
Can you imagine Appalachian Rick Rubin?
There'd be a lot more banjo, that's for sure.
Yeah. Have you thought about playing the feet?
What do you mean, play the feet? You're like, yeah, can't you see?
Your feet are drums you don't have to pay for, Jay-Z.
And then he's just like, no way. We could have had feet rap. We could have had a whole world of board stomping samples that... Man, I wish Rick Rubin was Appalachian.
Welcome to Last Podcast on the Left, everybody. My name's Marcus Parks. I'm here with Henry Zabrowski.
Yeah.
And Ed Larson.
Mud.
It's his favorite word. Apparently, it was his first word.
Yeah.
Mud.
Yeah, butt was my second.
Yeah. We're here for part two of the Hatfields and McCoys.
And we're going to get a little bit more death.
A little, actually, when you compare the death in this one to the death in the last one, about equal.
Got it.
All right.
So when we last left the Hatfields and the McCoys, a Hatfield vigilante group had just executed three McCoys by firing squad after a Hatfield had been murdered in a drunken fight that had allegedly started over a standing fiddle debt.
Hey.
Why was the show so long? You just did it all right there.
Yeah, that's it. Congrats. That shows the power of storytelling.
Yeah. Brevity. Brevity.
So let's get it straight. Now, remember, so the Hatfields, they got money and strength and numbers.
And land.
And they got all the timber. McCoys, glandular issues
angers,
to make them super angry. Yeah, they have anger spheres deep inside of them. Remember that? So right now, what? So technically, it's Hatfields 3, McCoys 0. Or 2.
No, 1.
No, it's Hatfields 4, McCoys 1.
Got it.
Yeah, because you can't forget about Harmon McCoy way back in the day.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. Like during the war.
Yeah, during the war. Yeah, or right at the end of the war, yeah. Okay. Which is technically the first shot fired.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is 4-1 at this moment.
And how many men are named Bad?
Two.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In this episode, there will be two men with the modifier "bad" attached to their names.
But they are very bad.
They are very bad. One of them, however, did give himself the nickname "bad."
Because he was like, "I want to be worse." That'd be fun. Worse friend.
Well, after the Pawpaw murders, the matriarch of the McCoy clan, Randall McCoy, had taken his wife's advice to let the law take care of the Hatfield vigilantes. Randall had come to call these vigilantes Devil's Hellhounds.
Cool!
After the Hatfield Patriarch Devil Ants Hatfield. Why did he make them sound cooler?
Then you cut to the Devil's Hellhounds, and you know it's just three guys sitting on the porch going like, feels like it's gonna rain today.
I found something new on my nuts.
Yep. Is it another one of them ornery spheres?
Well, I mean, technically, the guys in Deliverance weren't up to much until Ned Beatty and Burt Reynolds showed up.
Finally, inside an incident.
Was it Burt Reynolds or was it John Voight?
What do you mean?
In Deliverance.
They were both in it.
Yeah, okay. They were both there. Well, yeah. And then Ned Beatty had that, you know.
Well, we'll talk about that later.
Delicious sliding backside.
Burt Reynolds broke his leg and John Voight was the unlikely hero.
Gotcha. Okay. And so in September of 1882, a grand jury issued indictments against 20 Hatfield supporters and Devil Ants Hatfield himself, even though Devil Ants claimed to have once again been sick in bed when the triple execution had taken place.
I had the goddamn sniffle. I'm sorry, I can't go to the feud today. Someone bring me some chamomile.
I'm thinking about y'all because I got my crud and I don't want to give y'all the crud
because it zips through a few. You wouldn't believe.
It seemed, however, as if there wasn't much urgency behind those warrants, either because the sheriff of Pike County had figured that the eye for an eye principle had been applied correctly, or more likely because the Hatfields were a heavily armed and highly capable crew.
Doesn't want to deal with them.
No,
they're scared.
Yeah, I mean, these are extremely dangerous people.
Yeah, there's more Hatfields than cops, probably.
And you got to go look for them. Like, it's not like they're all in one big, like, office building. It's not like you're attacking Tesla. No. Like, it's like, it is a place you have to go deep in the woods and scurry them out.
It's like Vietnam. You're going out into the bush on their territory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, no Hatfields were arrested for what came to be known as the Pawpaw Murders for the next 5 years. But while some historians claim that those 5 years were peaceful, they really only say that because those years were free from multiple murders and massacres.
It's kind of like what we're going on, like, in America right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're not directly in a war, but it sort of feels like it.
Yeah, it feels like it all the time. It's uneasy.
Now, how many people is a massacre? Is three a massacre?
Let me ask Google.
If I were to guess, I would say a massacre. Well, I think
five was the Boston Massacre.
Massacres also, I think, depend on intent.
I think it depends on a reporter. Yeah. Mass killings. It's a mass killing. It says here. See, there's no legal jurisdiction.
Because these days we use the word mass killing, the phrase mass killing, more than we use the term massacre.
Yes, because massacre is just like, again, it's about branding.
Well, it's also massacre is something that you attach more to like a horror movie, like Slumber Party Massacre.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have quite the same weight as it once did.
What Joan Rivers used to say about an outfit.
Oh my God, it's a massacre.
It's a massacre.
See, after the execution of the McCoy brothers, men armed themselves with knives and pistols wherever they went, even if they weren't a Hatfield or a McCoy. And as we all know, the more weapons people have, the more likely they are to use them on each other.
Dude, I got this kitty clumper at the house. It's like an ebony stick with a ball on the end of it. And there's like a point at the end of the ball. It's like, I got it in Africa. Mm-hmm. And they use it to like hit lions in the head as they're charging you and shit and fucking kill them. I'm fucking waiting.
That's all he's been talking about.
I'm waiting, dude.
I fear for the Amazon drivers on his street. Yeah. I fear.
I just got my Christmas axe out of storage.
God help if an Uber Eats guy accidentally delivers him the wrong meal.
Oh, dude, I've got house axes that are like hidden in strategic places around the house. I'm not telling anyone where my fucking axes are. Just know there's a lot of axes sitting around ready to be used.
I will let
my weapons remain anonymous. Yeah. So you don't know what's coming.
Julie tried to get rid of one of my axes. And I was just like, and there was one of them's red. And I was like, well, that's the Christmas axe.
That's for Santa Claus.
So now I can only bring it out during the holidays.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, watch out. Don't hold, you're looking like a tree.
Well, to make matters more stressful, the local deer population, which was used by a lot of the mountain folk for regular sustenance, that was stricken by a mysterious disease.
Yeah, those deer thought that they could fuck without condoms for too long.
Yeah, deer syphilis.
Just ran right through them.
Reportedly, deer staggered around with swollen black tongues until they fell dead, and the corpses littered the forests in such numbers that it was compared to a biblical plague.
God's coming for our venison!
But what kept things simmering more than anything was Randall McCoy's unabated rage.
That's what it sounds like to me. His tumor is growing. God,
imagine him just screaming, taking a shit.
Ow! This goddamn shit will get out my ass! Someone call the doctor, I'm making red rocks.
Well, besides the fact that he was down three sons after the Pawpaw murders, Randall McCoy's timber operations were failing while Devil Ant's Hatfield was becoming one of the most successful men in the Tug Fork Valley. This rage was fueled by the aforementioned von Hippel-Lindau syndrome, which we discussed last week. And after I learned a bit more about it, I can see even more how it only exacerbated the feud.
Yeah, it's hard when you get a bunch of anger berries growing inside your organs, man.
And it's not just that. I mean, basically, this is what I think I may have figured out here. Basically, the Hatfields could actually see the McCoys' anger physically manifest. And as we know, Yosemite Sam levels of anger can be very funny.
That's what my father used to do.
So I'd imagine some of the Hatfields might have poked the McCoy bear a few times on purpose just to get a patented McCoy reaction.
Hey, Sam, watch this. I'm going to throw an apple at that moron over there. Hey there, gotcha, McCoy. Sam, you're wasting apples. You're wasting apples. Hey.
That's so much fun.
So, as a consequence of the disorder, McCoys would reportedly get beat red in their face as their overloaded adrenal glands became engorged at the most insignificant slight.
What if we told you that these were Light Folger's crystals?
Their hands would start shaking, they'd get splitting headaches, their hearts would beat out of their chest. In some cases, their faces would like wildly twitch. In some extreme cases of VHL, a person can get so angry that they actually pass out from what one author so poetically called an overdose of wrath.
That's amazing.
Wow. That's fucking cool, man.
I gotta get there.
Not far. Yeah. I don't do that much.
But that's all to say that the McCoys held grudges and were generally unpleasant to be around. And that went double for Randall McCoy. Now, after the Pawpaw murders, Devil Ant's Hatfield stayed in hiding while his so-called hellhounds acted on his orders. Top amongst his men was his son Cap Hatfield, so named because he'd lost an eye after an accident with a percussion cap.
Yeah, because Cyclops was already trademarked by Marvel.
Known as one of the most merciless and just plain nasty members of the Hatfield clan, Cap would be responsible for some of the most reprehensible and inexcusable actions to come. As far as appearance went, Cap was described as a grim figure with a trimmed beard, a mustache, and bangs slicked across his forehead that made him look, in the words of author Lisa Alther, like Adolf Hitler, only gloomier.
Wow. That's hard to be a sadder Adolf Hitler. Because I don't think it's not like when I see Adolf Hitler's face, the first thing I think of, like, that guy's got it figured out. That guy's loving life.
Imagine if he only had one eye, how much angrier he'd be.
Oh, well, or it would make him more empathetic.
I don't think so.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. We'll never know.
Well, supposedly he had one testicle. So,
well, we know that.
That did nothing. No. That just made him angrier.
Yeah, there's, yes.
Yeah. Well, Cap also had a bad go of it when he was 15 after being shot in the stomach on Christmas Eve. The bullet destroyed part of his colon, and for a long time, it was said that anything he ate would partially spill out of the wound.
Now I got a mind to show you my second butthole if you quit talking.
He's such a dick that he had two assholes.
Yeah, I got two. All right, I got my, I call one asshole A, and I call this one my side piece. Here's my little finger. Look at it. I can stick my finger in it.
Ultimately, though, Cap Hatfield was a quarrelsome and vindictive young man, described as simply bad, without a single redeeming point. A prime example is how Cap got his wife.
And the key word is got.
Yes.
Yeah.
He had become enamored with his first cousin, Nancy Smith, but she turned down his offers of marriage for years on end.
She's got all the finest qualities of my aunt, meaning bosoms and legs, and she got all the finest qualities of my uncle, meaning big old face.
Eventually, Nancy Smith married a timber merchant, but he somehow managed to get mysteriously murdered 2 years after their wedding. Murder was never solved, but after that, Nancy Smith finally gave up and married Cap Hatfield.
See? Romance.
Yeah. That used to be romance. Yes. When a woman just decided to make the rest of her life horrible.
Yeah. You're scary enough.
Or it was decided for her.
Yeah.
But while Randall McCoy stewed in his juices, Devil Ants built up his timber business from various hidey holes, and random Hatfields and McCoys murdered each other with fair regularity, but little fanfare. There was, however, another character waiting in the wings to join on the side of the McCoys, a man who had been biding his time for years. That was the son of Rich Jake Klein, Perry Klein. This was the man who'd gotten the shit into the stick years earlier when Devil Ants Hatfield had swindled him out of Klein's 6,000-acre birthright.
Oh, yeah. And those tender memories go long.
Yeah, he's the only one with like an actual education.
Yeah, he becomes an attorney. Yeah. In the years since, he'd become an attorney and had spent a lot of time forming political connections, which he'd use against Devil Ants Hatfield in service of both his own personal vendetta and the McCoy cause. See, once Perry Klein became reasonably successful, he cozied up to an up-and-coming Kentucky politician named Simon Bolivar Buckner.
Great names in this whole fucking... I love all of this.
There are so many great names, it's hard to remember whose side what person is
yes.
on.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing is that it's a kind of a... It's an interesting name because Simon Bolivar. Yeah, Bolivia. You know, down he was a huge figure in South America.
They probably saw it in a magazine or something. They're like, Bolivar! That's a credit!
Well, Buckner was running for governor of Kentucky, and Klein promised the relatively ample McCoy vote if Buckner promised to bring the Hatfields to real justice for the Pawpaw murders.
And this is where the government comes in.
Mm-hmm. See, at this time and place, murder was a relatively loosey-goosey charge. More akin to today's charge of manslaughter. This was due to the fact that Kentucky's prisons were so packed that if a murderer was not sentenced to death, he could expect a release after only 8 years or so, on average.
Like Norway.
Such extreme differences.
Yeah, it really is. Well, because it shows they're like, well, they're either a super villain, like they have killed dozens of people and they're a war criminal, we gotta kill them right now. But if you just kill like one guy, it's like, you know, we got enough people to feed anyway. You know, we don't need all these people.
Well, how hard can you break a rock?
It would help.
I think I need to go.
I gotta go.
Hang him!
No, I can break some rocks.
Furthermore, the governor at the time was pardoning as many people as he could to earn votes. By the time he was out of office, he'd released over 1,000 inmates. In other words, if the Hatfields were caught, convicted, and incarcerated, the punishment would most likely not fit the crime in the minds of the McCoys and Perry Klein.
They want total destruction of the Hatfields.
Yep.
They want them to be taken down. They want their lands back. They want them all dead.
Yeah. So Perry Klein hitched his star to Simon Bolivar Buckner. And after Buckner was elected, Perry Klein was able to get the Pawpaw murder indictments brought back to the forefront 5 years after the murders had occurred. And when it came to feuds, Buckner was no longer all that concerned with rankling the locals, as feuds in general were starting to become a serious problem in Kentucky. Besides the Hatfield-McCoy feud in Pike County, there were five other feuds that were even bloodier, although none of those had the natural narrative structure of the Hatfield-McCoy feud.
Yeah, that's why we can't get into it, because they're really just a bunch of guys killing each other in the woods.
Yeah, that's it.
And no one even knows their names.
Yeah, they knew their names, but nobody remembers their names today.
Gotcha.
And they're looking back, and it's also very poorly recorded.
Yeah.
It was a violent mess. Kentucky was a violent mess.
Yeah. As we have said before, it's just interesting because this one feud just serves as a weirdly picture perfect way to look into this phenomena.
Yeah.
And it's all spelled out, you know, that shows kind of like the dynamics between the groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they just kill someone and dress them up like a dead deer and call it a day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been like, oh, someone must have been hitting.
Paint his tongue black.
My God, that deer was just enjoying his life, dancing disco, anonymous partners, and then the Grim Reaper comes.
But besides the fact that the previously entertaining feuds were becoming a real danger, the feuds, in a much more historically consequential sense, were getting in the way of the industrialization of Appalachia. Or Appalachia, Appalachia.
I got enough response back that said Appalachia is fine.
Cool.
It's just Appalachians do that, and they're the ones that get mad when you don't.
Okay.
But most don't. But people within Appalachia and Appalachia, it does exist. But, you know, it's you. It's on you.
It's like the Nolans thing, you know? Like,
yeah,
they get mad. No matter how you say it, they get mad.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, saying
that.
New Orleans is not correct. It's at least New Orleans. But you most of the time, you go, Nolans.
No.
But then also, Rob understands, it's like Long Island.
Yeah.
Technically, Long Island is one word.
Long Island.
Yes.
Yeah. While the railroad, coal, and timber industries were still rapidly expanding, the feuds were not what you'd call business-friendly. And if Buckner could get these feuds under control, then he'd be able to bring in the serious money men, people like the Rockefellers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Everyone involved could become truly wealthy.
And now you guys get to all be brought into the fold. And then, just so you know, there's great opportunities for all of you guys to work yourselves to death in our minds while you guys used to just live here for free and sustain yourself. But you needed us because now we give you this opportunity to die underground.
So if you stop killing each other, you could die slowly.
We're slowly. With a paycheck.
Yeah, you could die slowly in my name. It's great. And so in 1887, Governor Buckner posted rewards for the 20-some-odd Hatfields who'd been indicted 5 years before. This attracted loads of bounty hunters who made life even more dangerous for the people caught in the middle. Additionally, Buckner also reached the governor of West Virginia, a man named E. Willis Wilson, who was nicknamed Windy not only because he gave long speeches, but because he was a frequent and fragrant farty bitch.
Now listen, all right? My speeches are not that long. This is about the farts, and I know, because I am Windy, all right? They call me Windy because... God! I go, yeah! Honestly, I'm having a hard time even getting through this speech. Head! Name's Windy! And you'll remember it.
Stupid. I expected it and wanted.
Yes. It was included for a reason.
It was encouraged. It was encouraged. But farty or no, Governor Buckner asked Governor Wilson to authorize a special deputy to hunt the indicted Hatfields. And that's how Bad Frank Phillips got involved in the Hatfield-McCoy feud. Bad Frank, he was the one who gave himself the nickname.
But he deserved it.
Yes.
He's the one that deserved it. Now, did he have a Grogu? Can you imagine the weird little Appalachian preemie that somehow continued to live like a little satchel next to him? You must protect the child.
But while you may imagine Bad Frank to be an old grizzled bounty hunter type, a Clint Eastwood, if you will, he was in fact just 25 years old and already had two ex-wives and five children under his belt. And I'd argue that he hadn't earned the nickname Bad Frank yet.
I think
Bad Frank is for some 35 and older. You don't get Bad Frank until you hit 35.
Mm. Well, mostly it's because, in my mind, if I'm calling somebody Bad Frank, it's because I know a good Frank. And I'm just labeling a Bad Frank because, you know, you got to know that's the Frank you don't get haircuts from anymore.
Yeah, but you also don't give yourself your own nickname.
Yeah. You know, well, I guess you don't.
Yeah. So if you start telling people, no, it's Bad Frank, then there's something going on.
Hey, now, hey, I'm Bad Frank. Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah.
You can't stop and correct people.
No. Described as a rat terrier of a man, Bad Frank was small but fierce and was feared even by the McCoys with which he'd allied himself.
It's just a scene from a movie. You could totally be like, all right, now who's going to handle our little Hatfield problem? They're like, we can get super tall, Greg.
No, I got hang last week.
We gonna get
quite the feat to hang super tall, Greg.
We had to put a tree on top of a tree. It was an almost Egyptian level architectural marvel.
What about Cholera Jim?
Also passed recently. And there's a hat going around for that for his family. Also, by the way, it's a bit of a we're doing. It's called a go fuck me. But you know, then the crowd parts, mm-hmm. and it's just this little tiny man being like, yeah, I'm bad.
Well, as far as what Bad Frank did for fun, he drank. But he was also said to accost strangers he came upon during his travels by shooting at their feet to make them dance, all while he laughed himself silly. That shit's not like a...
Is that real?
That's real.
Yeah.
People would do it. Dance.
Woo-wah!
Yeah, all right. You can go now.
All right. Well, I've wasted all my bullets. Because then the guns are empty. Yeah. And now the guy can just kick you in the nuts.
If he's got any toes left.
If he won. Yeah. If you dance fast enough.
Yeah. Fly from your grave.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about 2 literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time, because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me, to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey! Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. That's one of my favorite things about it. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Now, personally, I'm in the middle of re-landscaping my yard. I like to do it myself because I called up a landscaper to see how much it costs, and it was absolutely insane. Plus, I love dirt. I love getting my hands in the dirt, and I love planting things myself. and Fast Growing Trees has given me some wonderful plants that I can use. Like, I got this Texas sage. It's purple. I've dug up a whole bunch of horrible bushes and shrubs up in front of my window and in front of my house and put some purple Texas sage up there, and it's going to thrive, and it's going to look real good. And I didn't even have to go to a nursery to buy it. It came to my house. Now, this spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code LEFT at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code LEFT at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code LEFT. Offers valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Now, Bad Frank almost immediately got overzealous when it came to his appointment as special deputy. He overstepped. The people of West Virginia soon came to fear Bad Frank as a man who would invade homes without a warrant, kidnap anyone who he thought might be involved with the Hatfields, and whisk them away to Kentucky. In one instance, Bad Frank Phillips arrested a man that he thought was a Hatfield ally named Tom Chambers. But while the guy he arrested was named Tom Chambers, it was not the right Tom Chambers. Strangely, the man Bad Frank arrested was Tom Chambers' stepfather, who was also named Tom Chambers.
This is what I'm talking about.
It's a pain in the ass.
This story is like so annoying sometimes. Yeah, just like,
they need you just like name each other different. Have different names.
Awful Frank.
Yeah. Nuisance Joe.
Yeah. Stinky Tom.
Stinky Tom.
Yeah. But even though Bad Frank quickly lost his official position as special deputy because of fuck-ups like this, he continued his duties in an unofficial capacity. Due to his tenacity, he and his posse had, by Christmas Day 1887, illegally abducted most of the indicted Hatfields for trial in Kentucky.
Damn.
Now, Devil Ants Hatfield was at a bit of a loss as to how to stop this without killing a government-appointed official, even if Bad Frank's title had been stripped away. Finally, though, he figured that if he took out the angriest, most rageful McCoy, the rest of the family would run out of steam. That, of course, is how Devil Ants Hatfield decided to justify a murderous raid on the home of one Randall McCoy in what came to be known as the New Year's Night Massacre of 1888.
Now, I want y'all boys to remember, right? Randall's gonna be ornery. Gonna be lazy, right? He's gonna be sitting in a chair, seems to be almost like useless in a way, unable to defend himself in many others. We're gonna get him tonight.
Yeah. Now, to take down Randall McCoy once and for all, Devil Ants tapped Bad Jim Vance as head of the raiding party.
Yeah.
Bad Jim Vance very much earned his nickname. He was a little older. In the years since the feud began, Bad Jim also came to be known as Crazy Jim.
See, this is a good, that's a promotion.
Yeah, in this time and place, Crazy Jim was a nickname to take seriously.
Oh, yeah, nobody's wearing a shirt. Right, like, you're in an area where nobody is a normal man. Normal doesn't exist.
Well, that's going a little bit far. That's playing into the stereotypes that aren't necessarily true.
You're right.
I mean, there are men who don't wear shoes. That Squirrel Hunt Sam.
That's different. Yeah, that's different. That's natural.
But still, like, these people were, I mean, by evidence, unhinged.
That's what I'm saying. So on the whole, I'm saying they're unhinged. So if he's Crazy Jim.
Yeah, Crazy Jim. It's not Wacky Jim.
Yeah,
it's like Wacky Jim and Crazy Jim are two entirely different people.
I don't want, honestly, I'd rather be next to Crazy Jim than Wacky Jim.
Because Wacky Jim would get you caught.
I think that if you upgrade to Wacky Jim.
I think Wacky Jim was the guy in the fucking scene in Deliverance.
That's Wacky Jim. Being like, hey, he's always got some left field idea.
He's like the kind of guy who's like suspenders break and then he replaces it with two belts.
Anything's closed to me.
And so on the same Christmas day that Bad Frank Phillips and his posse rounded up the last of the reachable indicted Hatfields, Devil Ants sent Bad Jim Vance with a small band of raiders to kill Randall McCoy in his own home. Now, out of the 37 Hatfield family members and goons who participated in the overall feud, 9 came along on this mission. The party included, amongst others, the intellectually disabled yet highly violent Cotton Top Mounts.
Gotta have him.
He was the so-called wood colt son of Devil Ants's brother.
Yeah.
You had Devil Ants's 3 eldest sons, Jauncey, Cap, and Bob. A timber crew member named French Alice. The real Tom Chambers.
Okay. Oh, great. Yeah, good. Yeah. He's there.
And a son-in-law of Devil Ants's sister, Matilda, named Gorilla Mitchell. And that's Gurr, not Gore.
Yeah.
I just watched Captain Ron. I get it.
Gurr, Gore! Told you to watch out for gorillas. Now, the raid was supposed to take place on New Year's Eve, but as the raiding party was approaching the house, someone knocked down a fence and sent it crashing down the hill.
It was probably Cotton Top.
That's a shitty fence, by the way.
Why even have it?
Tripped over a frog and fell down the fucking hill.
This, of course, alerted the McCoys, and the raid was therefore postponed until the next night.
They won't see it coming tomorrow night.
I think I heard a dag nabbit come from the woods.
Yeah. That's definitely, well, let me use my listening ear. Yep, that is definitely the tumble of an intellectually disabled man through the woods. I know it well because I've done it myself.
And according to legend, right before the crew approached Randall McCoy's home on the actual night of the raid, Bad Jim Vance turned to the men and said, quote,
"May hell be my heaven. I will kill the man that goes back on me tonight if powder will burn."
It's a shame for this. He could have been a poet.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, but I hate punctuation. But, I guess maybe in a fashion I would be like E.E. Cummings.
But if he was a poet, it'd be more like, "May hell be my heaven.
May hell be my heaven.
I will kill the man that goes back on me tonight. Yes. Powder will burn.
You will all see what I plan to do." Oh, yes. Oh, there's mud on my gloves.
Now, Randall McCoy was by no means alone in his cabin. With him was his wife, Sarah, his 25-year-old son, Calvin, Tolbert McCoy's young orphan son, Mel, and four daughters ranging from 5 to 29 years old.
I just see them all sleeping in one big bed. It's a Looney Tunes.
We're literally on top of each other.
All the sleeping caps. That's all I see.
"I am Mel, son of Tolbert."
Son of Tolbert!
All were asleep when the raiding party were spotted by the McCoy watchdog, who barked at the first sign of intruders.
Bark.
Bark, bark.
Bark, bark.
Once the
play all the characters. That's nice.
Bark.
Once the lamplight inside went on, Bad Jim Vance yelled,
"Come out, you McCoys! Surrender as prisoners fall!"
But before the McCoys even had a chance to think it over, Jauncey Hatfield, either nervous or drunk, probably drunk, he fired first, which caused every other member of the raiding party to open fire on the home.
There's got to be fucking trigger discipline. There's just got to be something. Like, you have the one guy going, "Hold!"
Yeah.
"Hold!"
Yeah, the Braveheart.
Yes.
Yeah, no, well, you also just got to keep your team sober. Mm. Make sure Jauncey doesn't get too fucked up.
How do you get him in the killing rage?
Ah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, determined to defend what was theirs, both Randall McCoy and his son Calvin returned fire, wounding Jauncey Hatfield in the shoulder. Right around that time, Bad Jim Vance got the idea to set the roof of the cabin on fire, and he sent either Tom Chambers or Gorilla Mitchell to climb to the top with a torch. The sources vary.
I'd send Gorilla Mitchell. Probably. That's what he does.
Yeah.
What does Tom do? Sounds like Tom's the guy from MySpace. I just see the guy from MySpace just hanging out.
No, Gorilla Mitchell's going to clamber.
That's his job. Yeah. Yeah.
But before they could set the roof alight, Randall McCoy shot the fire starter in the hand and blew off three of his fingers down to the knuckle.
Them's fingers belong to my sister. That's racist against other people, and I'm sorry.
Yeah. And that sent him tumbling off the roof. Others in the raiding party, however, managed to set the cabin on fire on the ground level. But since there were no Hatfields on the roof anymore, Calvin McCoy climbed into the cabin's loft, which had holes cut every 6 feet so it could be defended in just this type of situation.
Yes. Man, you know that was an argument between the wife and
you gotta stop cutting the holes. I'm telling you, the Hatfields are coming. They're gonna start burning our cabin from the bottom, and then I'm gonna climb up in the holes and say, "You're crazy.
There is snow on the turkey. There is a squirrel in the bathroom."
And right in the middle of the gunfight, he just looks over his wife with this shit-eating grin.
Yeah, I told you so.
What I say, Sarah.
See, sometimes husbands are correct.
Sometimes husbands are correct. But from that vantage point, Calvin was able to hold off the raiding party from invading the house. Meanwhile, Randall's daughters, Allifair, Fanny, and Adelaide, tried putting out the fire with water and the only other liquid in the house,
buttermilk. It did little to abate the blaze, but it did create the horrible stench of scorched dairy.
That's the smell of war.
Mm. Been there, done that.
Yep. Yeah, scorching that milk.
Yeah.
Out here scorching that milk. Now, after the girls ran out of water in the house, Allifair, the eldest, tried making her way out to the well for more water, despite being disabled from a polio infection.
No, don't send quick Stephanie. Send Allifair, whose legs don't work. Yeah, that just works. Yeah, she'll use her arms.
But she was the oldest.
Yep.
So you didn't want to send the little girls out there.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But in an action that would sway public opinion against the Hatfields, Cap Hatfield mercilessly gunned down Allifair with a bullet to the chest.
Yeah, not good.
Almost immediately, Allifair's mother, Sarah, rushed to help, but she was stopped by Bad Jim Vance. Bad Jim Vance clubbed her with his rifle, breaking her arm and hip. Joining in, either Jauncey Hatfield or Cotton Top Mounts pistol whipped Sarah so hard that the gun butt left an impression on her skull. She was 58.
Yeah, it's
like
fucked 59. Up.
59.
And, but this is why. They in the end, it's not good for them.
Yeah. The rest were still busy with Calvin McCoy, who was still popping out of the loft holes, firing shots to keep the raiding party from advancing further. Eventually, he hit Cotton Top in the forearm and drove the Hatfields away from the house entrance into a covered passageway.
Something jumped up and bit me.
I feel like at any point, every character in the story has like 2 to 4 bullets in them.
Yeah, yes. I mean, yeah. It does get there. They're softer bullets.
That's actually a question that's asked later on. It's just like, why is everyone getting just wounded? Why are there so few deaths and so many wounds?
I think because it's hard. It's like extremely, extremely hard.
It's extremely difficult to shoot a man.
Yeah, and the bullets are different back then. They're like
they're soft.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. They're still like, this is the time when the Winchester repeating rifles started coming along.
Okay.
You know, when the Colt law, I think lawmaker, lawgiver, I can't remember what it's called, but like, you know, Colt just came out with this pistol. The pistol, they say, won the West. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those guns are solid.
Yeah.
Like they're not fighting with like muskets or like single shot rifles. Because
you can
anymore.
Fight with them now. Like you could shoot one of those guns now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You could hold off somebody with a Winchester repeating. Yeah. It's the one that you go like,
okay, yeah. I can't wait.
Because it was the first rifle that you could use without having to reload after each shot. So it changed the fucking game. And guess who had the Winchester repeating rifles? The McCoys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the McCoys were the ones who actually had the better guns, which is why they were able to hold off a larger force.
That's really interesting.
The Hatfields are the ones with money.
Hey,
get the good guns.
Well, it shows what happens when you cut corners.
Well, this is the funny thing, is that eventually, like, Devil Ants Hatfield's like, we got to get some of them guns. And so they ordered a bunch of rifles and 10,000 rounds of ammunition. But his wife filled out the order form, and instead of bringing in 10,000 rounds of ammunition, they brought in 1,000 rounds of ammunition.
Yeah, it's not enough.
Which is nowhere. That's like one gun battle.
Yeah.
You know, with the McCoys. So it's not. Yeah, she fucked up.
Yeah, it's about inventory.
Yeah. And the McCoys.
And this is why Civ is important.
It really is.
It's all about Civ. It's about RPGs. Mm-hmm. If you could actually sit and understand what's in your quiver, what do you have in your supply area, all right, because that's just as good as your fight's going to be.
Yeah, why didn't Devil Ants' wife have a Steam account But in the end, there were just too many Hatfields, because someone did manage to set the roof on fire, which took away Calvin's advantage. He was forced downstairs, but still, he and Randall were able to hold off the Hatfields for the time being. Overall, the battle lasted for 1.5 hours. But the climax came when Calvin made a break for the corn crib about 100 yards from the house to provide further defense and cover for Randall. At this point, though, events occurred very quickly. As Calvin ran, the Hatfields turned their fire on him, which opened them up to an attack from Randall McCoy, who busted out, dressed only in his nightshirt and long johns, holding a double-barrel shotgun.
Well, now we've woke up Daddy. Now he's ready to go. That's scary.
Yeah, this is the 19th century version of the game Don't Wake Daddy.
Yes.
The first barrel of the shotgun hit Jauncey Hatfield in the shoulder, although most of the damage was absorbed by his thick coat. Likewise, Gorilla Mitchell was shot in the gut by the second barrel, but his cartridge belts stopped most of the pellets. Because Randall McCoy, what it sounds like, he's just too far away for the shotgun to do damage.
He's just blasting from the porch.
Yeah. Out of shots, Randall then went for cover, but he hadn't kept the Hatfields busy enough for Calvin to make it to his own cover behind the corn crib. Just as he was almost there, either Jauncey or Cap Hatfield aimed and shot him in the head from 75 yards away, at night no less. killing him instantly.
That's like one of those things they'll talk about forever as friends.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You remember?
Those like the kind of guys who do all those Instagram tricks. You know, they just sit there and throw the card for fucking four days until they get it. And we're supposed to pretend like that.
You're like, wow, you got this in one go.
I mean, they've been there for an hour and a half shooting. They're going to hit him eventually.
Randall, meanwhile, managed to slip away to a neighbor's farm where he burrowed and hid in a haystack to save himself from death by McCoy or exposure. With their target long gone, the Hatfield gang rode off with their wounded in tow. And just before Cotton Top Mounts passed out from the pain, he famously said,
"Well, we killed the boy and the girl, and I am sorry for it. We have made a bad job of it. There will be trouble over this one."
Yeah.
So the only rational person's Cotton Top?
Yes. Yeah. He's the only one
like, he's the only one that like sees ahead.
I feel like that was bad. And I feel like it's going to come back and haunt all of us.
Y'all think maybe we should hire a PR firm?
It'd be nice. Maybe we should talk to a lawyer.
Now, despite being clubbed and pistol whipped, Sarah McCoy, 58 at the time of the attack, she'd survived. She had, however, been knocked unconscious, and by the time she woke up on that cold night in January, the blood from her head wound had frozen her hair to the ground.
Yikes.
Eventually, neighbors came to help, and the story that was told showed that the Hatfields had finally gone too far, even for the feud-obsessed people of Appalachia. Particularly, people took issue with the murder of Allifair McCoy.
Absolutely.
And the nature of a midnight raid on a family home. That just generally left a bad taste in people's mouths as well.
You kill people outside at an election. That's how it's supposed to go.
Yeah, I mean, instead of being basically another spontaneous gang fight or a gun battle between a bunch of idiots, the Hatfields had engaged in a premeditated raid against a family.
It wasn't just guys blowing off steam anymore.
No, they'd set fire to a home without regard to the children inside. They'd savagely clubbed a grandmother nearing her 60s. They'd gunned down a polio survivor, who was a woman to boot, for no crime greater than trying to keep her family cabin from burning down.
Yeah, you don't have to complete all your New Year's resolutions on the first day.
It's like, it gets through to March, all right? Shoot a girl who survived from polio in the springtime.
But even though public opinion had turned against the Hatfields, Randall McCoy and his two surviving sons still had to move out of the Tug Fork Valley, because there was nothing left for them on the farm. They moved into town in a Pikeville over in Kentucky.
So right now, Hatfields have won.
Yeah.
That's how I put it. Hatfields are currently winning the feud.
Yeah, they're winning the feud, but they're
losing
winning
the people, but they're winning the feud.
Yes. But as far as Devil Ant's Hatfield went, he was far more upset that the raiding party had failed in their mission to kill Randall McCoy than he was about how badly they'd fucked up the job.
Because there's partially a little bit of him that does sort of, maybe it's too much credit, give him a little bit of practical, like, he knew that if they killed Randall McCoy, it will end.
Yeah.
The feud will go. If we knock him out.
Yeah, but it was also...
But you still killed a bunch of little girls in the process.
Well, that's the thing. It was also on him to realize that if you send a fucking band of raiders to a person's home...
And if you don't... I mean, this is fucked up. If you leave witnesses.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's also the thing.
They left a lot of witnesses.
But they could have killed every... I mean, if you killed the entire family and burned the house...
You have to finish the job. You're going to do something that's horrible.
Yeah. Yes. But you also want people to know that it was...
Oh, they'll know because they'll go to the McCoy house and it's gone.
Yeah.
It's like a burning... It's like a pile of cinders and everybody's dead.
That is true.
Yeah.
But because the raid had gone so badly, Bad Frank Phillips and attorney Perry Klein formed a posse of 20 men to resume the raiding of random homes in search of the Hatfields. Because Perry Klein, you would think, is like, oh, he's the guy he's an attorney. He's, you know, involved in politics. He was fully involved.
Yeah.
These people. Like, he was out there.
He's angry.
Yes. He's very
angry. Motivated.
Yeah. But where not a single Hatfield had been found in 5 years following the Pawpaw murders, it took only 8 days to find and kill the leader of the New Year's Night Massacre. On January 8th, 1888, Cap Hatfield and Bad Jim Vance were walking along a mountain path carrying a bucket of gutted squirrels.
Just me and my buddy going through them forests, gonna have ourselves some squirrels. You are my best friend, Bad Jim. You are my best friend, Mr. Cap.
Well,
Bad Jim, he wasn't in any mood to sing any songs because even though they had a bunch of gutted squirrels, he made himself sick because he'd eaten too much raccoon meat.
It's just so sweet and slimy.
When you got a bucket of squirrels, save a little room. Don't eat all the raccoon meat.
It's one of those things where, I sit down and the first thing they serve is all these delicious raccoon meat, right? And I'm starving, I'm blowing through the appetizer. I don't even get to the entree.
I got to work on my portion control.
I got to think about my eyes are bigger than my stomach.
I didn't want to finish the raccoon, but I needed a new hat. And so,
man, my hat's wet.
Now, Cap and Bad Jim were able to see the posse led by Bad Frank Phillips and Perry Klein coming down the road. So they hid behind some rocks. When the moment was right, they started shooting. But maybe because Bad Jim was still reeling from his succulent raccoon meal, he was quite quickly shot in the arm. Knowing that it was all over for him, Bad Jim told Cap to run off and warn the other nearby Hatfields about the posse. And this posse also included Squirrel Huntin' Sam and a man curiously named Shanghai Will Ferrell.
Think about this. That there was a man named Shanghai Will Ferrell during this time period, and we know nothing else about it. There's no history about it. We just have the single, I'm going to say, mysterious. That's a mysterious name. Well, I think it was him.
Will Ferrell's had him expunged from the internet just out of fear of getting canceled.
Where is Shanghai?
He might have got Shanghai'd.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was an actual term. Like, it was an actual thing that people did. I mean, it was probably a racist term.
Now, what is it again?
Shanghaied is when you are, it's kind of like, what I remember, it's you get kidnapped and forced to serve on a ship.
Basically, I don't know how the origins of the term, but that's what it is that you, we did an underground tour many years ago of San Francisco where they talk about that they would. You'd go to a specific shady bar that you probably shouldn't go to. And like that bar would kind of be known as a place that would deliver free workforce to these two shipment people.
Well, the reason why it was called Shanghai is because, they were kidnapping guys and they were putting them on
trips. They'd
get
them all drunk and they'd wake up on a boat.
Yeah. And the reason why it's called Shanghai is because Shanghai was the common destination of ships with abducted crews. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Now, why wasn't Squirrel Huntin' Sam hunting the squirrels?
Because again, he was told to take a break.
Yeah.
They're all like sitting down here and been like, "We think honestly, we haven't seen a squirrel in months, Squirrel Huntin' Frank. All right, we haven't seen a squirrel in months, Squirrel Huntin' Sam. All right, we got to think about this. All right, it's getting personal for you. We need you to, especially after that incident with the full grown man dressed as a squirrel. All right, we know it's been bad. You set up a whole feud."
Nevertheless, the gunfight continued. But after Bad Frank Phillips shot Bad Jim Vance in the chest, it was all but over. Both of them aimed their respective weapons in what was to be the final shot, but Bad Frank squeezed first, hitting Bad Jim in the head, which sent his hat flying with brains in tow.
Cool!
Supposedly, two McCoys shook hands over Bad Jim's corpse and dipped a corner of a handkerchief in his blood to signify a blood feud revenge.
You just got coyed.
Another source claims that Bud McCoy dipped his fingers into Bad Jim Vance's exposed brains and used them to polish his boots.
Look, I'll show you what I'm about to do, boys. Yeah, all right. Ew. Show the ultimate disrespect. Gonna polish my boots with his brain. Man, I ruined these boots.
My wife's gonna be so mad.
So mad at me.
He then licked his fingers clean and went on his way, leaving Cap's nearly headless corpse on the path. Now, over the next week and a half, seven more Hatfield feud participants were rounded up by Bad Frank Phillips and Perry Klein. Although now that Big Jim Vance was dead, Cap Hatfield was the top target.
Why do you see in my head Perry Klein, David Hyde Pierce?
I don't know. David Hyde Pierce doesn't have
Devil
the
Ants?
Toughness.
Yeah.
Kelsey Grammer.
Now, that I could see.
Oh.
That I could very much see. I could very much see.
You don't see Perry Klein as David Hyde Pierce?
Because David Hyde Pierce is too fussy.
Randall McCoy, the father from Frasier.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
So
that's...
you're just casting crazy.
I'm just saying, if you think about
Who's Daphne?
She got shot. She was the one. She was Allifair.
And squirrel hunting Sam's going to be played by the dog.
Yeah. That's cute. It's like Wishbone. But all these guys get their brains shot out, which is a good new pitch for a re-up for Wishbone.
But on January 19th, 1888, my birthday, Bad Frank's posse.
You're old.
I thought it was the 21st.
Huh?
The 21st.
I know when my own fucking birthday is. It's January 19th.
He might be wrong.
Holden's birthday is the 21st.
28th.
28th of December.
Fuck.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bad Frank's posse ran across a sizable Hatfield force at the banks of Grapevine Creek in West Virginia, where another drawn-out yet ultimately futile gun battle was to take place. Now, there's no definitive account of this story, as everyone had their own version, but by the end of the two-hour-long gun battle, neither side had killed or captured anyone of any consequence from the other side, although there had been several gunshot injuries.
Yeah, there should have. There better have been.
How many of these are ricochets?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of it's like them shoot themselves. It's like them literally dropping bullets on their feet is what's hurting.
There was, however, a death after the gun battle that would not hurt the Hatfields at all, but would greatly damage the reputation of the McCoys.
So now they got one.
Yeah. See, after the Hatfields retreated, they left behind an ally named Deputy Bill Dempsey. Supposedly, Bad Frank Phillips walked up to the wounded Deputy Dempsey, who'd already surrendered, and put a shotgun to Dempsey's neck. And as Dempsey begged for mercy, Bad Frank pulled the trigger and blew Dempsey's head clean off his shoulders.
Cool.
But the problem for Bad Frank and the McCoys was that Dempsey was an actual lawman.
Mm.
So arrest warrants were issued for Bad Frank and the McCoy posse.
See? This is the thing. Now you fucked up.
Yeah.
Now that if he's not a Hatfield, does this count on the scoreboard?
No.
Okay.
No. But it does count against the McCoy, again, helping in the feud, hurting them personally.
Yeah, I mean, the Hatfields lose a soldier, but that's it.
Yeah, it's a flag on the play.
Yeah.
Yep. Everyone's mad. 15-year penalty.
Well, this swayed public opinion back towards the Hatfields, or at the very least brought the needle back to the center as far as who were the white hats and who were the black hats.
Becky, I was reading the news this morning. Is it possible that all war is bad? Becky, I'm so used to things being simple and easy to decide. Which is the difference?
Also, how is Cap still alive with this second asshole?
Again, man, it's just people were different.
Yeah. He got better, or it was legend.
Yeah,
okay. It might have been legend.
Yeah, again, if you're so much an asshole that you have two, yeah, that does sound like a folklore.
Yeah, because they say that like food would spill out of it. So I don't know.
It doesn't happen.
I don't know that. I don't think it happens like that. Yeah. I mean, it's more likely like shit's gonna spill out of there.
Colostomy Bag Nation, side stories lpotl@gmail.com. Just poop boot your shit out of that hole every once in a while.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know what I think?
Done. And research done.
From personal experience that I'm not gonna get into here, I think the food does sometimes come through partially undigested. I'm not
like
quite
a big corn of the cob.
Spinach as well. I've been having some spinach show up in my poo-poo, not digested.
Yeah. Skittles?
Yeah.
Would they pop out?
Only if you swallow them whole.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, I mean like bits of like chewed food, mm-hmm, but like they
pop. SidestoriesLPOTL@gmail.com. Do you have two assholes? Please let us know what it's like.
No, I can just, I have someone I can call like right after this.
I don't want to harass someone. I don't want to hunt them down.
Live from your grave.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. It's a daily weight on my life. How much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins as soon as I wake up. And a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy. Because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lastpod.
Ah, Jules. Oh, Jules. Make a wife smile today. The road to getting engaged can be long and full of memories and pitfalls and landmines. Or it can be short and thrilling, like a roller coaster on the way to the police department. But the road to finding the perfect engagement ring is a straightforward path every time. All you've got to do is head over to BlueNile.com, and they're going to ship them rocks straight to your wife's new fingers. On BlueNile.com, you can create a bigger, more brilliant piece than you can imagine. At a price you won't find at a traditional jeweler, Blue Nile is the original online jeweler since 1999. That's present time to me. Their diamond price guarantee means that in most cases, they can meet or beat a competitor's price on a comparable diamond. I know when I got my wife a beautiful Blue Nile necklace, the first thing she did was, "What did you do?" But afterwards, she was so happy to have it, and she loved it, and she wore it when we went on vacation, and my own, did everybody come around being like, "Where'd you get that piece, you beautiful woman?" And I was like, "Stop talking to my wife. She's spoken for. You can see it with the Blue Nile bling she's got on her." Right now, get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with code LASTPODCAST at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code LASTPODCAST at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors. It's a waste. Don't waste hours on apps. Besides appetizers, that's the kind of apps I like. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Did you know that empanada is already Spanish? I didn't. Thanks, Babbel. Did you know that burrito is already Spanish? Wow. I just got to learn all the rest. And eventually, I'm going to be eating downtown Mexico. Thanks, Babbel. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at Babbel.com/left. Get up to 60% off at Babbel.com/left, spelled Babbel.com/left. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Now, the New Year's Night Massacre and the ensuing battles turned the Hatfield-McCoy feud from something the national papers might pick up every once in a while if they needed to fill space, turned it from that into front-page headlines across the country. In these stories, the Hatfields were portrayed as ruthless desperados, while the McCoys were the good guys upholding the law.
Interesting.
Intent only on bringing the murderous Hatfield vigilantes to justice.
That's an interesting first blush.
Well, remember, that's kind of what the point was, because after the Pawpaw Tree murders, Randall McCoy wanted to form a posse and go get him. And his wife said, like, "No, let the law take care of it." And that had been the McCoy's line all these years. "We're going to let the law take care of it. We're going to do this legally."
Yeah.
The Hatfields are a bunch of psychopaths. You know,
they're evil capitalists.
Yeah, they're evil capitalists. Yeah.
It's so weird because they're the ones with the tempers.
Yes.
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 But they are righteous in their anger. And I feel, and again, it's about small scale warfare versus large massacres. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's kind of what we're looking at. It's more they pop off easy, but they have a guiding line of we're not supposed to be doing, we're supposed to be allowing the courts to handle this at some point.
Yeah. The New Year's massacre was like horrible.
Yeah, it was very bad. That's why that's why they're losing.
Mm-hmm. As a consequence of the tide of public opinion turning, Devalance Hatfield's creditors decided to call in all of his debts at once, which he'd been refusing to pay out of principle because he believed he was being overcharged by all of them. But once the debts were called, Devalance was forced to sell off the land he'd strong-armed from Perry Klein. And who else bought it but a coal agent working for a group of Philadelphia capitalists who paid Devalance's debts as a part of the deal. In the 2 years following, much of Devalance's land was cleared for a railroad that increased the value tenfold. Because as it turned out, that land was located not too far away from a 13-foot-wide coal vein.
And now this is kind of what we're leading to in this series, is this idea that this was the true consequential part of this story.
Yeah.
Was that they used all of this shit to just slide on in. Mm-hmm. And because they just think they're dealing with local problems. Yeah. And handling local problems. Well, this is the problem when you're dealing with somebody who has a long view, quote unquote, of history, that you're just a fucking little bump on the road on.
Who bought the land? Who is this guy?
A coal agent representing a group of Philadelphia capitalists.
So like, they're Yankees.
Yeah, they're Yankees.
He's a guy who probably had a suit, but he probably showed up in a straw hat. Like when I used to have super powerful agents, and they'll be like, when they used to take me out to lunch, and they would be like, well, Henry likes big sloppy fat boy barbecue, right? They would take me to some big gross restaurant and then they'd eat nothing.
Yeah.
They'd sit there and eat like a salad and they're like, get it, fat boy. Like they want to see you do it. Yeah. They would be like, get a big rack of ribs. We know what you like, you know? And then me like, so you probably showed up dressed like a Hatfield, you know, like straw sticking out of his mouth. They're like, well, I do know what it's like out here, I reckon, dealing with these hard Scrabble times. Sometimes you need to reach out.
Well, I would compare him to the most, a character, an example that I know you know, the psychopath advanced man for in Deadwood.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's that guy.
It's that guy.
Okay.
Like, yeah, that's the agent that goes out in advance of like the very, very rich people before they come in and destroy everything.
Yeah, this is how we take out all these idiots.
Yes. This exactly. is how we make it so that your stuff is our stuff.
Yeah. Now, that isn't to say that Devil Anse was landless or penniless. Since the coal agent had paid his debts, Devil Anse still had $7,000 from the sale of his land. And it's hard to calculate what that would be equivalent to today, but it's probably in the range of like $250,000, yep. if not more. Yep. I mean, he's still a rich man in this day and in that time and place. But that's all to say that Devil Anse still had plenty of money to buy a new homestead off an eccentric wanderer named Old Hawk Steel. He just didn't have any use for it.
He was also 25 years old.
God, I love these names.
Interestingly, though, Devil Anse now lived several thousand acres inland from the Tug Fork, meaning that both he and Random McCoy had now been forced out of the area where their families had lived for almost 100 years as a consequence of the feud.
It's almost like it's good for nothing.
Yes. But even though, yes, yeah. war.
What is it good for? The economy. We talked about it.
Say it again.
Yeah. National exports.
Yeah. But even though Devil Anse was far away, his new cabin was built alongside a fort with logs 2 feet in diameter and walls 12 feet high. Inside this windowless fortress, he had stocks of food, water, ammunition, and weapons, enough to fight off a small army.
Fun.
To defend the fort, Devil Anse organized a small army of his own and a system for summoning them with a code of rifle shots, whistles, bird calls, and animal cries.
All right. Now, when I do 3 rifle shots, bang, bang, bang. 2 whistles, all right? I do my squawk, and then I make a rhino grunt. You bring me my coffee. What are we doing here?
Well, so intense was Devil Anse's paranoia that he installed a drawbridge over the creek in front of his own cabin.
Goals. My fucking dad's a shit, dude. I want a fucking moat so bad, dog.
But just as private detectives and bounty hunters galore were drawn to the Tug Fork Valley in search of fugitives, a newspaper called the New York World sent a reporter named T.C. Crawford to see if he could find and interview Devil Anse Hatfield himself.
Quite a fortification here I've got here, Devil Anse. Is it called if I call you devil? It's nice to say I'm back from New York and I got to hear all about this amazing feud.
Now, T.C. was a city boy through and through, and once he arrived in Pikeville, he complained that every night the town turned into, quote,
an absolute orgy of unruly crowds routinely overwhelming the local sheriffs.
And he's from Brooklyn.
Yeah, this man could go down to the, like, this is when the Bowery was, like, at its worst.
Yeah, this is when there was literally, it's called Gangs of New York. It was an entire movie.
As far as where all this happened, the people of Pikeville allegedly used the courthouse to sell moonshine, gamble, fight, fornicate, swear, and smoke.
It's fun.
Yeah, sex workers referred to as she-devils.
Whoa!
Who wore, quote,
scandalous dresses with not much below their knees, besides coarse wool socks and men's boots.
But T.C. Crawford was able to find Devil Anse Hatfield through a friend of Devil's. The interview and the additional coverage would be the basis for the first book about the feud, An American Vendetta, A Story of Barbarism in the United States.
This might be completely wrong, but wasn't this in like, didn't Sean Penn like meet with Gaddafi?
Yeah.
Was it one of those where he like sat down and they like talked about it?
He met
about
with
it?
El Chapo.
Is that who it was? Chapo. It was El Chapo, where he sat down with somebody where you're like,
He also went to Gaza.
He's in a black, I can watch a ship.
Sean Penn.
Is he still just saying, I'm sorry for I Am Sam? He doesn't have to. It was a different time period.
He went to Libya after Gaddafi was
for
overthrown.
Vacation or
no, to tell all the people good job.
Oh, good.
Yeah, no, he's a war tourist.
He's a war guy. Yeah, he likes it.
Well, this book would help create the stereotype of the uneducated, violent, deviant hillbilly. Although Devilance didn't do the people of Appalachia any favors when it came to his interviews.
He had to keep kayfabe, man.
Yeah, he did. When Crawford asked Devilance why there were so many shots fired in the feud, but so few people hit or killed, Devilance said, quote,
I'll tell you, the human varmint is the most curious and cunningest varmint there is. And when he goes into a fight, he turns his body sideways. So there is presented for the bullet only 4 inches of life space. And even that, he doesn't hold up far and square, right? He just keeps a dodging and a frisking about. And so when the bullets come, they don't find him.
Direct quote.
Sure, yeah, and they're so skinny, you know, because they're only eating squirrels.
When a man turns, he becomes completely invisible. Have you not seen Bugs Bunny versus Elmer Ford?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because I haven't come across a single person in this story named like Fat Bill.
No, this is a time period where they didn't eat like that. I don't know. I'm sure there was big guys there.
Yeah, but they sat at the bar or whatever.
Yeah.
So when Crawford returned to New York City with what he believed was a full accounting of the feud, along with a healthy dose of yellow journalism, his stories ran for 3 weeks straight in 2 newspapers right next to dispatches from England about Jack the Ripper.
Why true crime now?
I actually did see a newspaper. There's a story about Jack the Ripper on one side and a story about the Hatfields and the McCoys right next to it.
Man, that was the time for podcasts.
Golden age. Yeah.
That is great newspaper reading.
Yeah, that's fun as hell, yeah.
But even though T.C. Crawford did make up a lot of shit, his writing was nonetheless captivating. He wrote, I've been away in Murderland for nearly 10 days. No one, unless he has had the actual experience of a visit to the region made notorious by the Hatfield-McCoy feud, would believe that there is in this country such a barbarous, uncivilized, and wholly savage region. T.C. Crawford, 1888. And I realized that he is like from New York, but it's not going to be like, it doesn't go with the music, go like, I've been away in Murderland.
No,
like,
yeah, 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 tell me about.
No one, unless no he's one. Had the actual experience.
It's not, that's when before New York was like New York.
No, at this point, the Brooklyn accent was like in full effect.
Really?
Yeah, it'd be like, I have been away in Murderland for nearly 10 days. Yeah.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yo, yeah, man. Brooklyn accent full effect in 1888.
I did not know that.
The Italians were there.
No, some Italians had it, but also that was kind of a Dutch thing, too.
Mm-hmm. But just as the bad press was coming in about Appalachia in general, more men involved on the Hatfield side were getting themselves captured, including a particularly violent goon named Alex Messer. Widely considered at the time to be the man who blown off Bill McCoy's head at the Pawpaw Trees, as opposed to Bad Jim Vance, Alex Messer had a reputation for being one of the most dangerous men in the Tug Fork Valley, with a reputed 27 notches on the butt of his gun.
I always find that the guys that you haven't heard about are actually a lot more dangerous than the men that you have.
Yeah, also no nickname.
No nickname.
Exactly, yeah, because he don't lock them.
No. Yeah, because again, it lets you know I'm coming. If I'm Bad Frank, you know that I could do something bad to you. If I'm just Alex, you could take you by surprise.
Yeah. Alex Messer's capture, however, was totally bloodless. On November 16th, 1888, 2 bounty hunters came across Messer at a general store off Big Ugly Creek. They struck up an amiable conversation.
Even the creek is a nickname.
Yeah, exactly. And the creek didn't want that. The creek is just like, I'm just here. There's no reason to come at me.
I'm just a burbling and a gurgling.
That's all I am. Just using me for your coal and your logs.
Well, making fast friends, Messer invited the 2 bounty hunters back to his place for a drink. But just as Messer was putting away his groceries, jabbering along, one of the bounty hunters cuffed him without a struggle. And that's all it took to capture one of the most dangerous men in the Hatfield-McCoy feud.
I guess they call me Captured Alex Messer for a reason.
Bad groceries, Alex.
A similar trick was tried with Devil Ants, but to no success. A detective got the bright idea to dress up as a tramp to get close to the Hatfield Patriarch.
He wanted to do it.
Like old school tramp with like the stick in the bundle.
Yeah. Just a wandering crew with my bindle.
But a neighbor spotted the detective before he put on his costume and warned Devil Ants that someone was coming for him.
Honestly, though, I want to see him. Because I want to see how good of an actor he is.
Well, apparently unwilling to commit all the way, the detective was captured and his tramp clothes were removed to reveal a brand new suit underneath.
And if it wasn't for these meddling Yankees, I wouldn't get so much bad press.
I mean, I get where he's coming from because, like, if you take your suit off, you got one. Where are you going to put it?
Yeah, where does it stay?
Yeah, where does it stay? So, yeah, he just did. But thankfully, this too ended bloodlessly when Devil Ants' men simply escorted the detective home all the way back to Ohio. They took him to his front door and said, do not come back.
First nice thing they've done so far. First.
But it's also the idea of not getting into any more trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to de-escalate.
Yeah. But the man who didn't get away was Cotton Top Mounts, who was far harder to catch than one might expect. Detectives tracked Cotton Top for days, then ambushed him near Mate Creek. Cotton Top was able to get off a shot that wounded one detective in the leg, but he was eventually subdued.
Y'all can't see me. I'm just a pine cone.
After his capture, the detectives took Cotton Top to the town of Edgar, Kentucky, where word quickly spread that one of the men involved in both of the most consequential events of the Hatfield-McCoy feud had been taken alive. Soon enough, Bud McCoy and a posse showed up and demanded that Cotton Top be handed over so McCoy could, quote, kill him and cut him up in 10-inch pieces. Oddly specific. The lawmen refused, but did promise that Cotton Top would be returned to Pikeville unharmed to face charges, which is supposedly what the McCoys were asking for all along.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, even though Cotton Top was a violent individual, he was also somewhat of a tragic figure.
I feel like even Cotton Top is surprised he's still alive at this point.
Wow. Honestly, I just want to go on stop living.
See, in order for the feud to reach a conclusion, there needed to be a blood sacrifice on the Hatfield side. And since Cotton Top was technically a Hatfield by blood because he was a so-called Woods Colt child of Randall's brother, he fit the bill. But it could also be that Cotton Top became a sacrifice because he not only confessed to his own crimes, but implicated a lot of proper Hatfields and their henchmen in both the Pawpaw murders and the New Year's Night Massacre.
So yeah, he flipped hardcore.
He flipped
He's
hardcore.
Sammy the Bull Gravano. He is that.
Yeah. Believing that he would avoid execution by cooperating and confessing, Cotton Top pled guilty to the murder of Allifair McCoy, Randall McCoy's polio-stricken daughter, even though it had been Cap Hatfield who pulled the trigger. But ultimately, someone had to pay for that death, and that someone was Cotton Top.
Again,
and the Hatfields engineered it.
And you know, this is called going to college. This is a part of getting made. You go, you do your time, right? You'll do a little bit in there in the hooscow. You come back out, they're going to put you in the books.
Yeah, that's not what the Hatfield said at all.
No.
See, that's the thing, is that Cap Hatfield was the one who had shot Allifair McCoy.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and they needed to get Cap Hatfield out of trouble. And somebody needed to go down for Allifair McCoy's murder. It wasn't going to end until someone went down for that.
Yes. It might as well be the most annoying Hatfield.
Yes. Well, and the most dangerous and unpredictable.
Yeah. And Cap also took great advantage of Cotton Top by promising him $500, a rifle, a saddle, and a rescue from jail in exchange for confession. Don't worry about it. Just confess. You'll come out of it.
Listen,
we'll break you out.
It's almost Christmas time. I'm going to show up dressed as Santa Claus. I'm going to explain that you have been absolved of your sins and you're coming with me to the North Pole. That's in the legal documents that say that's I can poppy if I'm Santa.
But by the time Cotton Top realized that nobody was coming to save him, he was already on his way to the gallows.
I think it might be too late.
Yeah. Now, on the day of the execution, Cotton Top Mounts wanted to wait until his mother arrived so he could say goodbye. She never showed, much to Cotton Top's sorrow, but not because she chose not to come. In another tragedy, Mrs. Mounts died of a heart attack that morning on the road to Pikeville.
Jeez. Oh, I mean, it's stressful when your kid dies.
It's time for him to go.
Yeah.
Did he know, you think,
no,
that she died?
No. No, they didn't find her body until days later.
Right, yeah, well,
At least there's that.
Yeah. Sadly, not a single Hatfield showed his face at the execution. And the only people who showed up on that day who had any connection to Cotton Top were his enemies.
Oh, yeah.
And both of them showed up highly intoxicated and belligerent. The first was Bad Frank Phillips, who, prior to Cotton Top even showing up at the gallows, had fired his pistols into the air, shouting that he dealt with the Hatfields and he's now ready to run Pikeville himself.
Again, Bad, we're trying to just kind of de-escalate here. Yeah. All right, this whole thing, it's you're trying to put a button on this.
Yeah. Deputies eventually overpowered Bad Frank.
So crazy.
And they confiscated his guns. And he ended up missing the execution altogether because he was in an alcoholic coma while Cotton Top was being hanged.
Oh, man. Same thing happened to me at Bonnaroo.
Yeah, it's very similar.
I slept through Pearl Jam. I still never forget myself.
Likewise, a drunk Bud McCoy got aggressive and knocked a sheriff to the ground, prompting a swarm of militiamen to take him down as well. But concerning the execution itself, Kentucky had banned public hangings 8 years before, but to technically uphold the law, a fence was built around the gallows, but the gallows had been built near a hill where the hangings could easily be watched by the 7,000 people who showed up.
And there's just legal guys standing there being like, yep. Nailed it. Exactly.
So all right, everybody, shut your eyes.
Everybody, just close your eyes. We ain't doing this.
Well, true to form, when it came to public executions, women sold baked goods, men drank moonshine, and a good time was had by most involved.
Yeah, everybody but one.
Yeah.
Everybody but one guy. Everybody but Cotton Top was having a good time. Yep.
But as the black hood was being pulled over Cotton Top's head, he finally realized that he'd been had, that nobody was coming. And his last words were that the Hatfields had made him do it. Days later, a McCoy supporter delivered a package to Devil Ance's house that contained the rope that had been used to hang Cotton Top.
Well, thank you.
I needed a good rope.
This is amazing.
It's obviously strong. It killed my kin.
This is incredible true crime memorabilia.
But after the trap was pulled and Cotton Top was hanged, there was then the matter of what to do with the body. The Mount family couldn't afford to bring it back to West Virginia, and the Hatfields were distancing themselves as much as they could from the whole affair. So, Cotton Top Mounts was buried in the Pikeville graveyard in sight of the gallows, which soon became a local hangout where drunken hillbillies held card games and engaged in the occasional fist fight.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's like Jim Morrison's grave.
Yeah, man. Except it's French people hitting each other with baguettes.
I went to Jim Morrison's grave. They've got these weird barriers around it, and it's really trashy because the barriers are covered with, like, you know, decals of people's shitty bands.
Yeah. They use it as a promo spot.
Yeah. Now, even though Devil Ance, Cap, and John C. Hatfield were still technically wanted for the Pawpaw murders and the New Year's Night Massacre, the people of the Tug Valley figured good enough after Cotton Top was executed. The government followed suit in wanting to move on, although they had their own motivations for doing so.
Yes.
See, the next year, a man named Aratrus Fleming was elected governor of West Virginia. As it happened, Fleming was connected to Standard Oil, owned by who else but John D. Rockefeller.
John D. Rockefeller
finally makes his fucking face.
Yeah, welcome to the last podcast. We haven't gotten to John D. Rockefeller yet.
Yeah.
And now he's in the lexicon.
The end of the feud, you see, made the Tug Valley far more attractive to investors. And so Kentucky and West Virginia agreed that the remaining indictments for both the Hatfields and the McCoys would stay unenforced just so long as none of these guys restarted the feud.
Now you're done. You're done and that's it. All right, you need this coal. It's done.
All right,
you don't gotta yell.
Fine. As a consequence, the Cumberland Mountain region was soon carved up by corporations who turned the formerly bountiful wilderness into a wasteland of railroads and coal mines.
America. Oh, America.
See, since the media had already inadvertently laid the groundwork for portraying the people of Appalachia as barbarians, Americans generally applauded the invasion.
Yay! Get the landscape! Yay! Mm-hmm. Blow
up the river.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to blow up a river? No. Let's do it.
It's surprisingly flammable in West Virginia.
Yay. Cool. The river's fire now.
Local politicians also welcomed the corporations because their pockets were being heavily lined at the same time that their constituents were slowly being turned into wage slaves.
Wage slaves. Yeah, we did it.
There was, however, a moment when it seemed like the ceasefire had been all for naught. Mm-hmm. 2 years after the execution of Cotton Top Mounts, an enemy of the Hatfields named Dave Stratton was found unconscious near his house with a badly battered head and a chest that had been nearly caved in.
Wait, before we jump to conclusions, maybe he did it himself. This is some form of the worst suicide I've ever seen.
And he died a couple days later, and almost immediately, people assumed that the Hatfields had been responsible, and the officials issued warrants for the arrests of Devilance, Jauncey, and Cap Hatfield.
Yeah, and you're like, God damn. It's like,
finally, a person I didn't kill.
It's just like
upon closer inspection, it was found that Dave Stratton had simply got drunk, runned over by a damned old train.
You know what honestly really should have teed us off was that his head was on the tracks. It's hard to get missed by a train if you're on there.
I don't know if he got runned over by the train, but he definitely got hit
by
the train.
Clipped. Yeah,
he got clipped real hard. Yeah. Not too long after that, though, another McCoy turned up dead when the body of Bud McCoy was found with 18 gunshot wounds near a lumberyard.
Again, before we jump to conclusions, what if a train shot him? Dumb Steve, you get the hell out of here. Bad investigator Fred, you're in.
Again, everyone was quick to blame the Hatfields, but Bud had actually been killed by another McCoy, Pleasant McCoy.
His name is Pleasant.
Yeah.
Pleasant McCoy shot him.
Over a personal grudge.
Pleasant,
if you'll remember, was the man who'd sued Randall McCoy years before because Randall had spread a rumor that Pleasant had fucked a cow.
Hey!
And considering how nicknames associated with events tended to stick in that area of the country, Bud McCoy's murder might well have had something to do with that.
You call me cow fucker McCoy one more time?
Name's Pleasant, motherfucker!
It's Pleasant, you fucking bitch!
But no matter how much people wanted the feud to reignite, Cap Hatfield wrote a letter to the editor of the Wayne County News announcing that an amnesty had been declared and the so-called war spirit within himself had abated.
I looked in the mirror and I declared myself innocent.
The feud was finally over, with the final score being 7 Hatfields and 10 McCoys.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you said it might have been 24.
I said between 12 and 25.
Yeah.
And 17's right in the middle.
Right in the middle.
As far as what the survivors did with the rest of their lives.
Oh, so now we're at the end of Animal House.
Yeah.
So this is the end of Animal House, right? So the feud is quote unquote over.
Yeah.
So now it's all like, you know.
Yeah. So Squirrel Hunt and Sam lived?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Squirrel Hunt and Sam survived.
A lot of them, more of them lived than didn't.
Squirrel Hunt and Sam, I'll get into him, but he lived a long life.
Hey, man, it's easy going out there, living a squirrel's life.
Surprisingly
nice.
Nutritious.
Yeah. Well, Randall ran a ferry boat until he died, but made sure to complain bitterly about the Hatfields to any and all passengers who had no choice but to use his services.
Can't wait to go on vacation with old Randall McCoy.
Yeah. I dare you to talk about the Hatfields. We're on the ferry.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you another story.
You're all trying. You're on the Lido deck. Trying to get
10?
10?
9?
He's like running the omelet station.
So annoying was Randall McCoy that neighbors said it was a shame that he hadn't been killed in the feud.
You know, sometimes, honestly, I wish I was too.
Mm-hmm. Finally, though, Randall met his end in the year 1914 when a cooking stove caught his clothes on fire during a visit to his grandson's house.
Oh, man, that was a fucking Hatfield.
It's like working on the stove.
Yeah, yeah, you never knew. Yeah, yeah, it was alive.
Got you.
Yeah.
And surprise! Holy shit, the stove's a Hatfield.
And Randall died 2 months later of his injuries at the age of 88.
Wow.
Concerning Squirrel Hunt and Sam,
yep.
He wandered the country. He went to Nevada, California, but always made his way back to the Tug Fork Valley.
Yep.
He married 4 times.
Can't fucking settle down with the guy of this forest.
Two of them women.
And wrote a book about The other two squirrels.
Yes.
And he wrote a book about the feud in the 1930s. Surprisingly, he put a lot of the blame on the McCoys for antagonizing the Hatfields.
Very interesting, but it was also a lot about acorns.
He met his end, however, in 1940. See, Sam never wore shoes. And after a particularly cold day traipsing the wilderness, Sam's feet froze and had to be amputated. Soon after, he died from complications related to the surgery.
It's real hard to hunt squirrels on stumps. It's real difficult to do it from a chair.
Can you blame him? He spent 60 years hunting squirrels barefoot.
Never thought about it, I guess.
Man, at some point, the circulation stops.
It does.
As far as the Hatfields went, John C. was eventually captured and sentenced to life in prison. But 6 years into the sentence, he saved the prison warden's life by cutting an inmate's throat with a penknife.
Yeah, good behavior. Extra good behavior.
For this, he was granted parole and went on to work as a land agent for a coal company owned by John D. Rockefeller.
Hey, hits keep on coming.
Cap Hatfield, meanwhile, died an unceremonious death from either a brain tumor or a long-held bullet fragment that eventually pushed its way into his brain.
Either way, let's go.
Concerning Devil Ants Hatfield, however, arguably the prime mover of the feud, he never went into town without a pistol or rifle in his hand ever again.
Oh, yeah.
And stood with his back to a tree or a wall while constantly scanning his surroundings whenever he talked to anyone.
No, he must, honestly, you know, it's traumatizing for himself.
Not only that, but I mean, even after Cotton Top Mounts was executed, like, bounty hunters would show up at his place and would just start taking pot shots at the fortress to see what, like, shook out.
Yeah.
There was even one time where a bounty hunter infiltrated the Hatfield fortress, worked as a handyman there for 6 months, waited for his moment when him, Devil Ants, and this little boy the Devil Ants had taken under his wing were out hunting raccoons. The little boy shot a raccoon. Devil Ants grabbed it and was like, hey, good job. Look at what he did. And he turned around and the fucking dude's got a rifle pointed at him. And he says, drop the fucking raccoon.
It's like, that's my raccoon.
And so Devil Ants, like, dropped the raccoon, brought his hands to his sides, and then, like, in a fucking flash, just...
Yeah, quick drawed him
and just shot him in the fucking head.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Yes.
Dropped the dude. Him and the four-year-old buried the body where it fucking lay, and they never talked about it again.
Wow. Now I'm going to tell you a little thing about called hiding a body. All right? It's important in apprenticeship that you learn something like this.
Now, we don't have any access to lime here.
Now,
but
not normally, you would smash the teeth. Cut off the hand. Cut off the feet.
Uh-huh.
And you got to boil down the meat. Feet to the dog. Okay. Feet to the hog. It's fun to do. You put it in the song. It's easy to learn. I do it for you. Wow.
But that's why he was paranoid.
Yes.
Because, you know, people were still...
Was he still wanted?
No, that he was...
He wasn't even desired.
After Cotton Top Mounts was executed, the warrants were still in effect for a little while.
Yeah.
It was a bit before they finally made kind of the truce of like, all right, if you guys keep your noses clean, we're not coming after you. And it's in that period of time that, you know, the bounty was still out. He was technically still wanted until he died.
One more question. How legal is it to kill a bounty hunter?
Is that a fair fight?
That's why they buried him in the fucking woods.
Yeah, it's illegal.
Yeah.
Because it depends, because you could be working for the U.S. government.
Yeah. Yeah, he might be under contract. Eventually, though, Devil Ants found the Lord Jesus Christ in 1911 at the age of 72. He was said to have been baptized with a pistol in his pocket.
And, that's cool.
Yeah. And he sent an offer of $10,000 to the McCoys to withdraw the old murder indictments, some of which were almost 30 years old at this point. Incredibly, though, the McCoys refused this large sum of money, but assured Devil Ants that they no longer sought revenge.
They just wanted anything from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they would have. That would have drove them crazy if they took that money.
Oh, yeah. 10 years later, Devil Ants suffered a stroke and died at the age of 81.
That's pretty old.
These guys all made it a long time.
Like, he won?
Technically, Randall McCoy had 7 years on him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Randall McCoy was 88.
I'd say it's as close to a draw as you can get.
Yeah.
Except for the entire region, which absolutely lost.
I'd still rather have a stroke than be killed by a living stove.
Yes, I would definitely much rather die in my sleep of a stroke than be consumed in flames.
And then spend 2 months dying
going,
from
it. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, concerning the legacy of the feud, nothing in American history did more to cement the reputation of the people of Appalachia as violent, backwards, illiterate hillbillies.
And I think that what we have done in this series is destroy that stereotype. I think that we have finally shown that the people of Appalachia are fine.
Yeah. Besides T.C. Crawford's book, 92 movies about feuding hillbillies were produced during the silent film era, not to mention all the Looney Tunes portrayals.
Yeah.
As such, Appalachia's reputation has never really recovered, and the stereotype was given an extra layer of deviancy with the infamous squeal like a pig scene in 1972's Deliverance.
And I tell you what it wasn't helped by was the show that Ed brought to my attention.
Buck Wild.
It's a show called Buck Wild.
Woof.
Which was in Appalachia. It was an MTV
Jersey Shore of West Virginia.
Jesus.
It went a season and a half until one of the main stars died mud.
Yeah, died literally of carbon. His car sunk in mud and he died.
Him and his uncle and some other guy.
Oh my God.
Here's a little clip. Yeah, they're spanking each other. Shane, they're jumping in the rivers. You know why they call me Gandy Candy? Because it's trick-or-treat
all year round. I'm a really chill girl, but I've been known to get into a fight or two.
She went to jail.
They call me Justin Bieber. I don't know about the Justin. But you know I know about the beaver.
I think Joey got out clean.
Yeah, Joey got out clean. Well, you know, he knows about the beaver.
Yeah.
That kept him focused. But even though the stereotype of the deviant hillbilly lives on, the feud between the Hatfields and McCoys has long been squashed. Starting in the year 2000, descendants of the Hatfields and the McCoys began having joint family reunions, where they adorably engage in an annual tug-of-war across the Tug Fork.
I think that's beautiful.
It is. It's very cute.
It's funny. It's very nice.
But in 2003, 3 years after the union started, an official truce was declared by descendant Rio Hatfield, who stated that the two families had put aside their differences for good in honor of 9/11.
So anybody who doesn't say that 9/11 wasn't good for anything, don't say that it really helped so that the Hatfields and McCoys could get together and as a unit attack Arabian people.
And that's the Hatfields and McCoys. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I was wondering how 9/11 was going to get involved.
It always does.
Yeah, how these fucking dickheads managed to make 9/11 about them.
Just in case y'all forgot. Yeah. I know everybody's too busy remembering 9/11. We were first.
Fucking all over the goddamn country.
We were first 9/11.
Now, how can I make 9/11 about me? How can I make something that happened in New York City about me?
What may think? I know.
Well, with Virginia, there was an attack in Virginia.
Yes, of course.
You know, so there was a little bit close to home.
Somewhat.
A little bit. But
it was an attack on the Pentagon.
It is weird how, like, every person that hates New York, like, has, like, a Twin Towers painting in their house.
Yeah. Absolutely. I fucking remember that when I worked at The Onion, there was a headline that said very much the same thing as that. It's like, you know, like Toby Keith coming out with all these fucking stick a boot in your ass. And it's like when he wouldn't piss on New York if it was on fire.
Fuck
every single one of them.
Well, what a wonderful tale.
What a wonderful tale.
It's a really important American history. Next week, we're getting into a super fun story for Christmas.
Yeah.
This next little series that we're doing is a really fun, I love this topic. And it's going to get real cold.
Let's call this a winter wonderland episode.
Yeah, it's going to get real cold. And you're not gonna be happy with it.
No.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I'm excited.
I really, really can't wait. First things first, we are experimenting with new logos.
Yes.
We are putting out, so we're going to be doing, like, we you know, there are a lot of changes here, which you guys are fucking obviously aware of. And so we're going to be sort of like playing around with how we kind of portray ourselves.
Yeah, gonna see what sticks.
Yeah. So just so you know, that's what you're gonna be seeing.
Can we get like a snake fighting a hawk?
I don't mind it. I don't mind it.
Idea number 34.
Put it on the list.
Yeah.
So we thank you guys for obviously, you know, supporting us and being there and listening to all the bullshit. Come out and see Eddie and I. December 22nd, we're going to be at the Knitting Factory, North Hollywood. We're going to be doing Classy Night Out. It's a Christmas spectacular. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be great. We got all the people from LPN that are in town are going to be there.
Yes.
It's going to be so much. It's basically a reason for us to all hang out.
That's basically what we're doing. We can't wait.
Yeah. Also, tonight and tomorrow, if you're in Florida, I'm all over the place. I'm in West Palm opening for Jeff Ross, and I'm in Boca Raton doing my own thing. Yes. Well, not my own thing, with Brian Kiley. But it's going to be a lot of fun. So Boca Raton at 8 p.m., West Palm at 7 and 9:45. I'm a fucking lunatic.
Yes.
I'm going to be driving all over South Florida. And then I'm going to the Dolphins game on Monday.
Yeah,
so fucking, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah, you deserve it, and it's going to be fun as hell.
I am.
And don't get into a fight.
Oh, never. Never. Why would it be?
Don't you get into a fight.
If I see a McCoy.
And also, check out the Christmas Pudtacular. We're doing it. We're putting the family back in Christmas. Jackie and I are doing our Good Pud Christmas special December 14th. You're going to be amazed. You're going to learn lessons. We're all going to share in the warmth of the holiday eating savory pudding. You guys are all going to like it.
Yeah, Thursday night on 5 LPN TV.
Yeah.
Twitch.
On twitch.tv/LPN TV, 5 p.m. PST. You guys are all going to get to experience some of the Christmas joy, and I can't wait for you guys to be there for Eddie, Marcus. You're going to be there.
I'd love to. I mean, what kind of pudding am I going to get to try?
You'll see. You're going to see.
Well, I mean, Christmas for me equals ham. Mm.
I don't know.
So that is one thing that I love, but also sugar cookies.
Who knows?
So that's also very good.
Who knows what's going to come out, because it's a little secret.
Ooh-wee.
Very nice.
Hail Guy.
Hail Sid.
Hail me.
Hail Ed. You're going to steal that from me?
Wow. Yeah,
that's mine.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah,
that's okay. Me.
Yeah. Guess what?
I'm me.
Guess what?
You're not me.
2-1. I'm giving it to him.
What the fuck? Fuck you.
You're not me.
No, that's mine. That's my branding.
Did you say, what did you say just now?
I say Hail Satan, but I do say Hail Me at the end.
Hail me.
I say Hail Me at the end.
Yeah, you didn't say it.
I say Hail Me.
Hail Me.
I Hail Me.
I say Hail Me.
I'm Hail Me.
I'm me.
Hail Me.
You're Henry. I'm me.
Me.
No, Hail Me. Hail Ham.
We're working it up.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.